You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
So I am Brad Oatney, and I want to tell you a little bit of my story and hopefully some things that we've learned. You'll see some things that I think the Lord helped us do right, as long with some many failures and some bumps in the road. So yeah, it's all about the long game. Just remember that part. Basically, I am an intentional person. My wife calls that driven. In sports, I'm super competitive. You know, I've had a detail-oriented job. I'm an optometrist, so for 35 years, you know, like all the details, the science, I'm a little bit wired that way. So that's now. So it's like one of those movies where you show the end part first and you back up and they start going back to this early stuff. So basically, I grew up in a family that was less intentional, maybe, just the kind of the way it was. And in a sort of an environment, there weren't a whole lot of rules. And then I basically... there wasn't a lot of structure, and 60% of my nuclear family is divorced. My parents were great. They loved me a lot, and they definitely taught me a good work ethic. So then I go to this high school. In this high school, they're trying a new experiment called an open classroom. There were no walls. It was just like this, the whole school. So you're trying to pay attention in algebra, and the art teachers over here and the Spanish teachers over here, super chaotic, was not helpful in a learning environment. Then I got to college, and the first 5 weeks were a ton of fun. Then I flunked my first set of midterms, and I got like a 32 on my first physics exam. And so that's, I think, the point where I said, what's going on? You know, and that's when I think when I finally said, I need this, I don't really know what intentionality is, but I got to kind of learn it because it's time. And I've, you know, kind of got myself in a pickle here. So that was pretty cool. And I became sort of intentional to try to figure out, you know, how does this game of life work? During that time, three things occurred in my life. First, I found that being intentional, I was intentional about finding this place called a library. It was quiet. You could sit there. You could have a plan. You would study. And that actually came out to be very helpful when it was time to apply to grad school, come to find out. And then a friend, another cool thing that happened, is a friend invited me to a Bible study at OSU. And I met the Lord, started a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. And then I intentionally spent time trying to learn what does he say is how life works. How do you make life work? What's the plan? And then the last part that happened during that time, which was great, was I met a girl named Ellen. And we got married, and shortly after, we had kids. But in that time, basically, I realized when we started having children, I had little, if I'm honest, no tools in my parenting toolbox. Found myself in that spot again, like, you know, what do I do? So there's my learning lab. This is one of my favorite pictures of all time. Those are our three kids, Elizabeth, Ben, and little Claire. And I used to love that. I loved reading them books at night. It was a ritual at night, just so much fun. But so, you know, I've found parenting to certainly be at times very challenging. At times, I see some tired eyes nodding, probably were up late last night. Confusing, but overall, super enjoyable and very rewarding. You know, the fact that I'm here today talking about mission-driven or intentional parenting, I think is pretty humorous. And I think it's kind of humbling because, you know, I basically didn't think I ever wanted to be married because I didn't really see that many great marriages. And I thought, if I ever get married, I certainly don't think I want to have kids because that seems like way too daunting of a task. So, you know, tough guy that I am, right? Get married, have kids, love it all. But, yeah, super great and super humbling. A couple disclosures before we start. No sane person should be up here thinking they're an authority on parenting. That's not a sane place to be. Doesn't exist. And good to remember that even if you have a mission or a plan or you finally do figure out, like, hey, what's going on, that is not a linear thing. It's not A squared plus B squared equals C squared, unfortunately. It does not guarantee the intended outcome. So, and why is that? Well, because despite our best intentions, we're actually dealing with another person who has free will. So we can have, all the parents are nodding, we can have great intentions and we can have great desires, but some of the desires, I think it's good to think through your head, in your head, what are desires and what are goals? Because you can't have certain goals if you have little people who say, nope, not doing that. So here's what I've learned over the last 30 years of doing this. So I guess my mission of parenting, like, just like I was saying, you know, when I found myself in, you know, the college thing and the life thing, and I was kind of failing and I didn't know what was going on. I think it was good to sort of be intentional and make sort of a little bit of a mission or the big picture, like, what's going on? So I think for me, and again, this isn't a formula. This is not any kind of formula that, you know, it's always going to work out, or it's not probably your formula. But I kind of got before God and was like, look, this is one thing I want to have minimal regrets. I know I'm going to have a lot because I put my foot in my mouth a lot. I have perfectionistic tendencies. My personality is not small. So all these things are going to put lots of places to trip over, bumps in the road for me. But it's sort of, my mission was kind of, I want to create this environment of God's love and grace that would help my kids want to follow Christ and want to be other-centered and serve other people and hopefully want them to do that their whole life. But the biggest thing is I want them to be convinced. Like, I didn't want them just doing it because they're my kids and that's what we do at my house. But I wanted them, I know, to go the long haul. You know, if it's not in their heart, you know, you can play the game and nod and go to the Bible studies and do the things, but I was hoping that at the end of the journey in our house that they would leave saying, that was compelling. I think I want to do this. And so in order to do that, we have to have a roadmap, right? And I want our roadmap to be sort of driven by Scripture. Because here we are getting ready to enter into this pretty uncharted territory of parenting. And like I say, when I started out, it was not intuitive to me at all. And I had limited skills. And lastly, I think when we're thinking about this, is it takes a lot of energy and a lot of effort. It doesn't just happen haphazardly, you know. Parenting, I found the intentionality of it, looking back on it now, was certainly helpful. Oh, so here's the other thing. If, you know, I just remember being at the hospital and the nurse saying, you have to leave tomorrow. And I was like, we got to take her with us? Like, I've been here for like 24 hours and you're going to release me with a kid to keep them alive and you know, not mess them up. And she looked at me like I was crazy. I was like, no, I'm serious. Like, I studied the eyeball. The eyeball is like this big and like, you know, many years of that. And I still am just kind of learning what to do. And you're just going to say, here's a human, have at it. And she looked at me and she goes, you'll be fine, honey. People have been doing this for thousands of years. And I just remember kind of walking out sort of bewildered, like, oh my God, what are we doing? So that kind of drove me to try to figure out kind of like, what does the Bible say? So, and I sort of landed after thinking and praying and like, you know, there's got to be, I got to figure out something that, you know, when the chaos of life comes crashing in, like, what am I going to focus on? I need something. I need like that point out there to stay focused in the midst of the fog of war, as they say. And this scripture really resonated with me. So, you know, if it's disagreeable in your sight to serve the Lord, choose for yourselves today whom you're going to serve, whether the gods which your fathers served, which were beyond the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose the land you're living. But for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. I was like, you know, I think that's going to be kind of a mission I want to build my, you know, parenting around. I want that to be the thing that's in focus when I'm, if I start to veer off to the left or to the right, what would I come back to? Or we would come back to, Ellen and I. So why be mission driven or intentional with parenting? This is a verse I love. Because where there is no vision, the people perish. I saw that in my, you know, previous life, growing up, school, college, whatever, if just haphazardly going through it, it ended up with some tough failure. And I was like, you know, I want to kind of learn from that. And I loved stumbling on this verse. Why else be mission-driven or intentional? Is that the stages of parenting constantly change. You know, if you want a book to teach you about the stages of parenting, this parenting book by Andy Stanley and his wife was really, really a great read. And it's kind of a newer book, but I thought the way they kind of laid it out, you know, and Beth Hemsworth taught us this 35 years ago in a class that was called Building a New Generation. And it was about parenting, and it was kind of like, you know, learning when they're little, you know, it's high control. And, you know, as they get older, you want that to come down and help teach them self-control. And then at a certain time, you're basically the sideline coach where they might come to occasionally for some advice. And that's the part where I kind of, I did not stay in my lane, my kids would say, throughout the years with that, where they were very forthright about reminding me about that and giving me feedback that I could listen to and try to recourse correct, which I'm grateful for. But, and also our lives as parents change, right? Sometimes we go through, as we're raising kids, you know, I'm trying to build a practice, you know, I was had all kinds of other things going on. You know, you have parents who have health problems. You kind of get, you know, you're juggling lots of things. And so I think we have to always have that, whatever you choose to kind of like, what's the end game I'm going for here? Like, what's our goal? What's our mission here? And stay focused on it through that. Yeah, for me, like I say, just building the practice. I got off track for a while because it was consuming a lot of my time. Doing some consulting, and I started speaking around the country. So I started traveling when our kids were a little bit older, but that started to get a little bit calling my name a little more than I wanted it to, so I had to recourse correct there. You know, I had this thing in my head where I wanted to kind of help raise sort of, I don't know, like Renaissance kids, the kids that no matter what, you know, they're going to have the resources to do it. And I would try to get what I thought those, you know, the ways of a man seem right at the time, but at the end they end in destruction. And God was like, no, you know, I'm the one in charge here, not you. And, you know, those are those little course corrections where if you have that thing that you're focused on, like Joshua 24:15, you can course correct. So the rest of the time, basically, is just going to be talking about parenting strategies that Ellen and I tried to be intentional about. There are about 7 or 8. First one, modeling, walking with Christ in front of them. You know, really kind of, I had this, I don't know, this thing came to me one day. It's like, you know, I basically live in this glass. I was at the dentist office once, and there was this fish tank. And it was glass, and you could walk around it on all sides, and you could see the fish. The fish couldn't hide from you. It was always in sight. And I was like, you know, that's kind of what this is going to be like with these kids. Like, they're always going to be watching me. And not to scare you to death or get you paranoid, but it is true. You know, we're living in front of them all the time. And I was like, you know, I put this little sign on my desk that I would read every day in the morning. It would be like, my kids are watching. I'm teaching them something. What is my life teaching them today? And Ephesians 4:1, you know, talks about leading a life worthy of your calling because we've been called by God. You know, I wanted my kids to grow up. I wanted them to see me walking with God imperfectly as I do throughout their life, to see that, you know, this is something, it's just not a thing for my dad. It's not one of his many hobbies. It's the thing. It's like, that's, you know, that's his thing. And throughout the ups and downs, you know, I'd pray that, you know, at some point they would choose and adopt this lifestyle for themselves and maybe their family. We tried modeling serving, and, you know, using our house, it was always full of kids. I mean, the kids were saying that, you know, boy, there were always action at our house, you know, whether it's home church meetings or junior high meetings or high school meetings, or, you know, just people coming out. We always try to make it where their kids would bring their friends over to our house and hang out. And, you know, I think my wife and I said this last thing probably a million times. And if you said people are, and asked my kids, and they would say more important than things. Like, it was a little mantra, even when they were little. And again, over the years, albeit as imperfectly as it was, we were trying to get that point across. So that was kind of the first sort of intentional things we decided to be intentional about the strategy. Next, I wanted to be strategic about covering them in prayer, because, you know, it's tough out there, and the world we live in is pretty magnetic, and it's going to call for their attention. And so I really, James 5:16, the prayer of a righteous person is powerful and effective. And boy, I'll tell you, I spent many, many, many hours praying for these guys through different phases of their lives. And it really actually gave me a lot of joy. I think that's one thing that God grew with parenting, was it really increased the quantity of my prayer and the quality of my prayer. Because if parenting does nothing else, it brought me to the end of myself, showing me that, believe it or not, I am in charge of nothing. I'm in control of nothing. I like to think that I am, but life showed me that ain't real. I mean, for me, literally, when times were getting tough and they were choosing their own personalities and identities and things, that I remember just physically being on my knees outside their door at certain stages, begging God to protect them from themselves and from some of the things that were going on, and that he would give them wisdom. And I know some godly old saints, we used to spend, Ellen and I had the good fortune of spending probably about a year or so, maybe a little longer, with Martha, just kind of studying with her. And she would talk about just how she prayed over each one of her kids. And if they were kind of going out there, getting off track a bit in life, that she was like, yeah, I just told them that me and God are the majority, and I'm praying if you're out there, you know, doing this or that, that God busts you out. I was like, that's pretty good thing to think about. And I prayed to absorb, you know, they're going to go through times with your kids when there's some negativity that comes out. And instead of just always pushing back on it, which I unfortunately did a lot, that pray for God, give me the ability to absorb some of that. And actually, I didn't put it on here, but this morning I was just praying, it's like praying for them to absorb some of my negativity. And I did see over the years some pretty amazing answers to some very specific prayers. And I have a prayer journal that goes back to probably, like the earliest one I found was 1987. And it was fun to put those prayers of different things. And then when we started having kids, some prayers in there, and to go and see some of those prayers not getting the check mark off, you know, maybe a decade or so later. And that was been really faith building for me to just see, you know, God is sovereign, but again, we also have that other person who's got the free will. It just, I think it helps you have a sane understanding of where we are in the formula. You know, you've got God's part, you got your part, and unfortunately the other person's part, and you can only play your part. That's where the humble pie I've been eating a lot of for 30 years of parenting. Third, I think we were intentional or strategic about scheduling time in order to, with the goal of, you know, building a loving bond with our kids and actually with our kids' friends. Have lots of fun with them. I mean, I do have, you know, videos. I had this, they were making fun of me. It was like a TV camera. My mom bought us this camcorder when I had kids, and it's like this thing like this big. And my kids saw it, and they were like, what is that? But I followed them around with that. I mean, we had so much fun as they were growing up. You know, everything from, I scheduled, like I would take off Wednesdays and schedule daddy dates so I wouldn't see patients on Wednesday afternoons as soon as we had kids. And that was just so fun. Everything from taking them down to feed the ducks to, you know, the park or just wherever, just to hang out. They loved going to the restaurants with me or to get ice cream or different things. And they liked to do it when it was not with some of their other siblings. They thought that was super cool. But we did, we scheduled that. I would schedule these crazy field trips with the kids in our neighborhood. Like I scheduled a field trip to like Cream of Nuts and to the, before all the security things, I had a patient that was air traffic controller. We got to go into the air traffic control center at Port Columbus and, you know, watch the planes come in, listen to them talk. I mean, they just thought that was the greatest thing ever. And, you know, we would have football games in the park where we would get like, you know, 20 kids and, you know, me and another dad or two would be the quarterbacks. Just all that stuff was so fun. And it was building in just positivity with them because I knew if my kids were anything like me, there was going to be a time when I had to take a stand on things. And if I was already had the relationship and I knew I was in their corner, there's probably more, I had a little bit of relational capital to trade with. There's all the other things, you know, how to, you know, when they were in college, I'd bring them over and say, okay, today we're going to learn how to change a tire. And this next Friday after cell group, we're going to go to Kroger. We're going to learn how to grocery shop and, you know, just put them in a cart. You know, we're running through Kroger at 11 o'clock and another cart, you know, full of zillion bags of Doritos and everything else they wanted. But I made it where, I mean, I actually looked forward to it when the kids would come around. It was really fun. So I put them to bed. That was that first picture of reading the book with them. I put them to bed the majority of their lives. And I'll tell you, when you put your kids to bed at night, it's super cool because I don't know, maybe it's just my kids, but they wanted to talk. And it's probably maybe just so they wanted to go to bed. But they would tell me things. It was just so much fun. Kind of hear what's going on in their little hearts. You know, what's their, you know, Ellen did this thing at dinner, like, what are your highs and lows? And, you know, just trying to get them to process what they're thinking and, you know, talk about it with the rest of the family and things like that. But I found that the bedtime was really great time. And we would pray, you know, pray with them each night when I was putting them to bed. And, you know, it wouldn't be too intense. I think, you know, half the time I would wake up, you know, like at 2 a.m. and I'm in this little tiny bed, you know, with them. Because I'd fall asleep because I was always so tired. But it was, they were great memories. Yeah, I probably spent half of my adult life sleeping in a tiny bunk bed. And they would finally be like, Dad, get up, go to bed. I got to be a room dad in their classes. That was super fun, meeting their kids. You know, just like helping, I don't know, whatever. Go make copies or do this or do that. But just kind of showing them I wanted to be around what you're doing. And I was super bummed. Like in seventh grade, I found out they don't do that anymore. So I'm like showing up. I'm like, you know, hey, you know, what are we doing as a room dad this year? They're kind of like, oh my God. You're freaking kidding me? Like, that is not my dad, you know? So, again, they teach you things. Sports teams try to, you know, do that with each one of them or whatever they're into. And this was another great thing that I think we found great, helpful for our family was hosting some of their meetings at our house. You know, you get to meet their friends. You get to kind of, you know... And it's risky business because, you know, every kid's different. Some of our kids wanted us to be involved in leading their groups. Some of them didn't. And you got to learn not to take that personally, but you want to let them kind of have the control of the relationship, I think. But just having their friends over and being involved in ministry with them. I got to go on some mission trips with some of them and serve overseas with them. In a medical clinic, that was super great. And the room dad thing, I remember one of my kids, they were like, hey, some parents, some of my friends in my class, dad, don't have dads. And she was like, would you mind if I shared you to be some of my friends' dad? I'm like, I would love to do that. So just little things like that, just they would see that, you know, we're like a little team, you know, we're like a little unit here trying to love people and do God's work together. And we got to marriage mentor some of our friends and some of our kids' friends. Some people may or may not be sitting in this room. And some people that from that have ended up in our YoPro home church. So it's kind of neat how God has a plan that, you know, you don't know anything about sometimes. Fourthly, we were intentional about communication. I tried to really foster open communication, basically answering any questions they had. And again, that can be risky business, especially when they got older. And they were starting to ask those personal questions and you're digging into your past history. And, you know, I decided I will answer any question you ask me, but I would really think through before you ask because the answer may not be as flattering as you might expect. And that led to some really crazy, like, have you ever? I'm like, yeah. They're like, no. Mom? I'm like, you got to ask her, man. I don't know. And then they're like, okay, but what about this one? Did you did it? I'm like, you know, I did. And, you know, I am really, it makes me sad to say out loud that I was involved in that kind of lifestyle for a while. And I remember them looking at like, no way. I'm like, oh yeah. So I think kind of that, you know, it's like, appropriate amount of information, like the kid says, you know, where do I come from? And you're like, well, you know, and you start explaining biology, and all you got to do is say, when they're little, I don't know, from a, you know, the stork or the pumpkin patch or something. Like, okay, cool, let's color some more books. So you got to kind of tailor it to their ability to understand, and you don't want to traumatize them too early. But it was fun, to be honest. And I realized after I did that, they started asking less questions. Asking for input. One day, this was my most risky experiment. So I didn't even tell Ellen. We sat down at dinner. They were probably middle school, maybe a little bit before high school, or maybe early high school, I can't remember. One day I sat down at dinner, I was like, okay, here's the deal. I want everybody to tell me the two most annoying things about me that if you could change, what would they be? And everyone was like, it's a trick. I mean, they were probably like looking at each other, like doing Morse code, like, don't take the bait, don't take the bait. And I was like, no, there will be no repercussions for your answers. But if there's some things, like there's certain things I can't, they're not negotiable. But if there are things that are negotiable, as a parent, I want to know, because I want to be more user-friendly if possible. Like, I want this to be a cool, like, you know, relationship. So they came up, I can't remember all, it was probably too much for me to hear, but it was things like, you know, you talk too much, you know, you say the same things over and over, you know, one of them was like, when I get ready to like take a big inhale, and we would be hanging out there like, wait a minute. I was like, what's that? And they said, I need to get myself in the right frame of mind. Is this going to be a conversation or one of your lectures? And I was like, ouch. Okay. And one of them pulled me aside after that and they said, you know, Dad, it seems like no matter what I do, I can just never please you. Like, no matter what I do, it's just never good enough for you. And I was like, man, that is gold for me to hear. Because now I got to make a decision. And unfortunately, I wish I could say, man, I was like the new dude after that forever. But we had to revisit that multiple times. You know, I have a high standard kind of guy, and I'm, you know, shooting high all the time. And so God humbled me there for sure. But it was cool. And as adults, they still come over and hang out. And we enjoy time together. So I think some of those course corrections have been helpful and have ended well. I apologized, probably not as much as I should have. But I did try to, when my wife and the Lord would hammer me for to do it, I did it. And that's a good quality to have if you are not into that, or if you decide you find yourself not doing it that much. I mean, maybe you were blessed with some really good communication and parenting skills, and so you don't have to. And that's, if that's the case, I'd be grateful for that. In our communication, whether it is verbal or nonverbal, I think we decided what hills we're going to die on. And it was through going through getting lots of counsel, different stages of life with people, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But I kind of thought the hills to die on for me were their relationship with God. Like, try to help them stay connected to the vine. You know, there's no formula again, but I remember trying to figure out, like, hey, do we, about fellowship, you know, I'm not going to, like, force you to go, but it is really important, I think, to continue to do that if, you know, Mom and I do that. And I really want you to, I prayed, that's probably the thing I prayed about the most, keep them connected to the Lord. Keep them in fellowship. And sex and drugs were like the worst things possible. And I played that card pretty hard. Some of that, I give them personal experience examples why. So, you know, whatever your thing is, but that's what we kind of thought. And I was open to the idea of counseling. One kind of cool thing happened once. One of my kids was like, "Hey, Dad, what do you do when you and Mom get to a point where you get stuck and you just can't seem to communicate? What do you do?" And I was like, "We go to marriage counseling." And they said, "You and I need to go to marriage counseling." And I was like, "Pfft." But of course, I was like, you know, tell you what, you tell me who you want to go see, and I'm all in. You know, we'll do. And that was a tough assignment, having, because the counselor was really skilled, and I was not. And they kept, what I found a lot of the counseling, they were sort of ribbing me the whole time, and I'm like, okay, like, I know I'm a part of it, but I'm like 50%, I think, of this situation, and we're spending 90% on me, and I'm paying for this, by the way. Of course, I didn't say any of that, but it was fun as I kept going. This person had a sort of a masterful end run where they came around the end, and they were like, you know, everybody's got their little part on learning, don't they? And that was really probably one of the, my one thing I'm most grateful for, because what could have happened is they could have not wanted to work something out with me. They could have not. Given me grace, and probably could have been alienated forever, and that would have been bad. So, but instead, maybe it's because of their walk with the Lord or whatever, but they fought for unity. And man, I'm telling you, that is where it's at. Super blessed from that. The next thing we were intentional about was finances, or the teaching of that. We sort of committed, Ellen and I, to have a simple lifestyle from the get-go. And we made our budget using one income. And we were going to buy our first house. They were like, "Oh, you can buy this kind of a house." We're like, "We don't want that kind of a house." They're like, "But you can afford it on paper." And I'm like, "Look, this is what we're, you know," at one point in time, my wife is expressing extreme interest in not working. If she wants to choose that, I don't want to be in a financial position where I'm locked in. And so we've made our kind of our life and our budget on that. And we chose to invest spending our money sending our kids to Christian school here. I saw some pretty compelling, and again, I'm not up here on a soapbox saying everybody's got to do this. I'm saying my thinking was, I saw compelling reasons to do that. And then once we were there, one thing I loved about it, I enjoyed it so much that I actually joined the school board so I could learn more about it. And that's another way you can serve as a parent. A side note is you can be on the school board for like 3 years at a time, which is really great. Anyways, back to the school, is I loved the fact that their grade card had character issues on it. I was like, this is so cool. And I would go to these parent-teacher conferences, and man, I had them scheduled. I mean, I'd be off work. I'm like first one in line, I mean, every time. And I mean, I went to every single parent-teacher conference. I could see the teachers kind of like rolling their eyes, like, what are you here for? I mean, they're doing fine. I'm like, no, I want to hear all the juice. Like, tell me what's going on. And it was so great. They would talk about things like diligence and grit and works well with others and serves others. I just was like, this is crazy. Like, having a part where you're teaching things that actually matter, like, not that many people are going to need to know what the three types of rocks are, you know, but it's really important to know. Do you know how to play in the sandbox of life with other people? Like, that's a great skill. So I saw that as an amazing investment for us. That was my favorite investment, I think. We chose for me not to own my own practice. You know, we thought that through early on because of a lifestyle things I didn't know. And again, I just think there's nothing wrong with owning a practice. I just know my personality, that I would be there working, you know, to where I would have no energy at the end of the day. And it would take, you know, I like to do things. I like to excel at them. And I like to, if I'm going to throw in, I really want to throw in all the way. And I just, I knew, and I got a lot of counsel from some financial people. And we decided for me, it would probably hamper my ability to be present at home, which I already struggle with, and my ability to serve how the Lord might want me to serve. So, and we kind of instilled in our kids, or I did, early on, just about, you know, the borrower is the servant of the lender. Like, you know, have your financial house in order and live simply and try to be a generous person, but, you know, live within your means. I remember doing budgets with my kids before they moved out. Like, you know, here's how much it's going to cost to live in a ministry house. And they were like, what? You know, how am I going to make $300 a month or whatever the number was? And I was like, and they'd be like, man, I'm like hyperventilating. Look at this. I was like, I'll tell you what, go downstairs, get a snack, get over your hyperventilating, and then come back and we're going to finish this budget. And they're like, oh. But yeah, I was intentional about it. I was intentional. We were trying to be intentional, not over the top, but just the stewardship of health. You know, promoted outdoor adventures, and you know, my wife was in play groups, and you know, we met a lady at a play group, and she was pregnant, and then Ellen and she had they've had babies at the same time. And they stayed in a little play group together, and this little person started coming to some Bible studies. And then, anyways, you know, 30, 35 years later, she's leading a home church. And it was just neat to be involved in something like that from, you know, we met these guys at a play group. Tried to promote, you know, reasonably, relatively healthy eating and reasonable exercise, not over the top. This was one of the things that I did die on this hill, the strategic use of IT. If you've never read Gary's IT overuse thing, my kids, I can't remember if we read it. I think it might be a recording or something, because I remember they, at one point, they probably had this thing memorized, and they were like, oh my God, I thought we were going to watch like a movie, but instead he's going to make us watch this thing again, you know. And so I probably overplayed it, but the world we live in now, you know, and I watched patients, and I listened to stories, and I know that, man, this stuff is so addictive. And I'm not an anti-techno guy, you know. I play in the metaverse and work in this, and I know I'm interested in AI and all these other things, but you gotta, you know, you gotta reel it in my opinion. I will not lie, I did downplay watching TV and other things. Like, I never had cable TV. We had these old TVs that could get like barely 4, 6, and 10 if you stood in like the right part of the place. And it was, you know, we didn't have, I just decided, yeah, I'm going to make it, they can go anywhere and get it, you know, or probably just turn their computer on. But anyways, tried to promote instead, you know, reading and sports and being outdoors, music, just something other than right here. And don't get me started on all that with the whole digital device use and what it does to your eyes. If you want to know later, I could carry on for hours about it, and your learning and dopamine hits and distraction. And so anyways, yeah, better flip the slide. We were intentional about developing strategic partnerships with older parents in the fellowship and with student ministry workers. Proverbs 15:22 says, without counsel, plans fail, but with many advisors, they succeed. Proverbs 19:20, get all the advice and instruction you can and be wise the rest of your life. I realized I had lots of places I got stuck along the road, and I was always looking for somebody who was a couple steps ahead of me. And I was never shy about it. I would just like show up to this guy or, you know, see him at CT, I'd be like, hey, you know, how did you survive when your kids, you know, became teenagers? Like, I am finding this to be more challenging than I anticipated. And, you know, it was great just to kind of have some shoulders to cry on. You got to have, you know, when you're in the fog of war, sometimes you need to have somebody who's like, oh, yeah, I've been through that. You know, you're going to get through it. Like, we got through it. You know, we had six kids. And you're like, oh, okay. It was just really important to get perspective when you're, or your kid is that one, you know, acting out or doing this thing. And you're like, man, you know, I can't believe it. And you talk to some other people and they're like, that's it? Man, you know, let me tell you a real story. And then you're like, oh, my God, you know. So, yeah, just I think just being around people who are a little bit further ahead was super helpful. In particular, I think for the ministry, student ministry workers, I got to know them, and I tried to do things like if people were leading a home church my kids were in, or if they had somebody that was studying with them, you know, when they would drop them off or pick them up, you know, my wife was like, we should give them like money to take them out to lunch, or we should give them like gas cards or something. Like, look what these guys are doing for our kids. So we found, then you start thinking about it a little bit, or having them over for dinner. Try to find ways where you can enhance what that person is trying to do with your kid. I mean, I'm like, look, those teachers at Calumet, the people leading these groups, the people studying with my kids one-on-one, like, I view that as like a extension of my parenting. I was like, you know, this is a sort of like the adjunct team. This is, you know, this is part of us. And I want to, you know, try to encourage that. I want to take care of those people and build warmth and try to help them do what they're doing there to the best that they can, and to make it easier for them. And, you know, most of those kids were college kids and, you know, sacrificing like crazy. I really got into some pretty heavy conversations with some of the people leading the groups, because I was like, hey, you know, I'm kind of all about doing well in school and all about keeping your options open with professional potentials later. And they're like, yeah, that's great. And I'm not ever against that. But, you know, if you load them up too much on their schedule with, you know, AP courses or, you know, traveling teams or fill in the blank, whatever your thing is, there is a finite amount of time, and you gotta watch that. So that was great, having some truth tellers showing me my blind spots. That was really key. And we went back and forth. We bantered pretty good, but it was in a spirit of love, and it was helpful. And I was just committed to learning and growing through cycles of failing and breakthroughs. Reading and listening to every parenting teaching I could get my hand on, or books. Taking those courses over and over for years, literally different stages of parenting. Like I said, cried on a lot of older parents' shoulders, and just getting that encouragement of someone saying, you know, this too is going to pass, was super great. And like I said before, when we got stuck, I benefited greatly for some marriage and some family counseling when things were at an impasse. So I guess just to finish up, you might want to think about some extremes to be aware of. You know, first could be like, are you an overly mission-driven parent? Or are you a, hey, why have goals parent? Like, things will just kind of work out. Know your tendency and lean against it, my wife says. you know, one thing that can go wrong, or a potential outcome, I guess, of being too mission driven is you can become pretty rigid if you're wired this way. Unrealistic expectations you can put on your kids or your spouse, and you can exasperate your kids, which is, it hurts you, it'll hurt your heart when you do that. And you can become less relational and more transactional. And that does not build a bond that would probably make it through the seasons of life. So, luckily, I got a great, amazing, godly wife who has had the task of keeping me in my lane over the last three decades with kids. And she'll often say, just let them be kids, Brad. You know, believe it or not, there are more to life than intentionalities or goals. And she has definitely led the way in kindness and gentleness, for sure. I mean, it's been, I praise God for my kids that I married her to offset my leanings. And for that reason, I think God has made us a great team. Love parenting with her. Still love it. And lastly, just basically remember that love covers a multitude of sins. You know, we're gonna as you try anything, you know, you're gonna have some failings, and you're gonna have some things that some regrets, and you don't have to stay there. Experiencing adult friendships with your kids is so life-giving. It's so fun. It's so great. Enjoy vacationing together or having Sunday night dinners together, just laughing and hanging out, listening to their stories, watching them banter with one another, seeing what the Lord has done there. That's the coolest thing ever. It's a gift. It's a great gift. Motivated me to want to do this when Sherry asked me, because I was like, you know, that's a lot of stuff to process. You know, how do you get 30 years of lots of ups and downs and left and rights into, you know, an hour? But I'm grateful for getting ready to really think things through again. I haven't really thought through like this in a long time. The Lord's brought me a lot of joy, and parenting has really humbled me through failure. We can't forget that God's grace is sufficient for us, and don't give up. Just like I said in the beginning, you know, you gotta, I just would ask the Lord, help me play the long game. Don't get focused on the here and now and get too beat down. Don't see how things are right now and extrapolate them out to forever. This is a season, and it shall pass, and especially if we're asking the Lord to guide us. And don't wish this time away. My house is so quiet now. It used to rock. The stuff used to get knocked off with kids and shake loose from rock bands in our basement, and, you know, just everything. It was full, awesome, energetic chaos, and now it's very quiet, which I don't mind, by the way. So maybe in 10 years, once I learn how to be a grandpa, we'll do another one on next generation grandparenting. That's what we're trying to figure out now. But that is a whole nother thing I'm learning of. And those wonderful kids of ours get to teach the old man another, you know, 30 years what's going on, hopefully. So.
Thanks for listening. This has been a Dwell Community Church production.